Hey guys, we get to another episode of When the Scriptures Become Real. It's a podcast where we learn, where we study, where we grow. We try to become the best versions of ourselves as we continue to serve our Lord. Again, you guys find the podcast on YouTube or anywhere else to get your podcast. And we're just so thankful you guys are here, you found us, and that you guys are with us today. Guys, I'm telling you, I could not wait to study this. I was so pumped last night. I was so ready to get here and to record. The excitement for myself has been great for this. But the excitement from your end, too, has been incredible. So just thank you guys for your shares and your listens. And keep doing that as we keep studying together and build this conversation with each other. I just really appreciate you guys and what you're doing for the podcast. All right. So if you don't know, we are in a series that we're entitling Single and Searching, Right? Single and Searching, Now, again, make sure you go back and listen to part one. And listen to part two, because that's really important before we get to part three. So I'm going to give just a quick like Cliff Notes recap, but there's a lot of details that you need to go back and listen to from part one and two so you can understand where we're going for part three. But quickly, just really quick, part one, we understood in the single and searching, it's not necessarily me in a state or you in a state, necessarily us looking or finding or trying to find things from other sources. Where we need to start, where square one actually is understanding the God that pursues us. Then that makes us that much better to pursue someone else, right? So then part two, naturally, when you understand that someone's pursuing you, God is pursuing you. He wants your heart. He wants to know you so intimately in everything that you are and who you were and who you are now and who you're going to become. Naturally, the person that the God that's pursuing you, you're going to have to sit with him and talk. So the person that's pursuing you is not just going to say it. They're going to want to sit and know you intimately. Now, we talked about this in part two. When someone sits and knows you intimately, there's going to be two conversations. There's going to be conversations that are going to be nice, that are going to be lovely, and that are going to be sweet. And those are the conversations most of us stay and sit for. But then when Jesus wants to know your past, when Jesus wants to know the sin you're struggling with, when Jesus wants to know your difficulties, when Jesus wants to know the things that's hurting you, when Jesus is trying to break down your walls, because we're so defensive, the only thing we know how to do is run. So sometimes we don't want to talk with Jesus. And that leads us into part three. Part three is this. We've learned to understand God pursues. Part two, we've learned that we need to sit with Jesus at the table. Now, we're still at the table with him right now. And here's part three. We have to struggle with him. I'm telling you guys, it's going to be a difficult thing when God, and then down the line, we're going to talk about this, but it's going to be a difficult thing when God wants to know you intimately, the God, Jesus, who pursues your heart, and then when a good man or woman who loves you like God eventually is going to get to the point where the lovely, sweet, beautiful conversations will still be there, but eventually it's going to have to get to the point where if I want to know you intimately in terms of getting married to Christ and then possibly getting married to you, we're going to have this conversation. We're going to have to get to know one another in a way that sometimes is hard. Sometimes maybe you've never talked about. Maybe sometimes it's difficult. And then in that sense, then that's where the struggle begins. Do I really want to do this? Do I not want to do this? Do I really want to do this? Do I not? You see what I mean? So this is where we are at the table. We're at the struggle. So if you're taking notes, I got my tablet and pen out. I'm looking at this in real time. All these things I'm applying to myself. I'm pointing the fingers back at me. And I hope you're doing the internal work as I'm trying to do the internal work as well. So if you're walking, if you want a group study, let's study together. Let's dive back into this table with Jesus. Let's go back to the table with him and let's see where we are. So here's where we want to start our conversation. I believe we've set ourselves up for failure. Okay. I believe that we have set ourselves up for failure. Well, what do you mean? I believe what we've done, and this is crept in to our relationship with God. And this idea has crept in to our relationship with our spouses. And this idea has crept in with our relationship towards those people that you're dating. Okay. Here's what the idea is. What we've done in setting ourselves up for failure, we have sterilized and we have made ourselves immune to the idea of struggle. I'm going to say that one more time. We have sterilized and we have made ourselves. Think about this. It's not anything God has done. We have made ourselves immune to the idea of struggle. Meaning this, if there are situations that with God, when I'm sitting with him and the conversation is lovely, I'll stay. But when he wants to know me intimately, when there's a sign of struggle, guess what we've defined that as in our society? We've defined struggle. We've defined tension. We've defined that as a red flag. Think about that for a second. Think about how insane that is. We've defined struggle with God, and we've defined struggle with others and all those different parties. We've defined that as a red flag. That's bad. That's bad. So then now, guess what that means? What do we expect out of people? Now, we don't say it, but that goes against what we're doing. So what are we doing? We're expecting a certain level of perfection. We're expecting a certain, because we've sterilized and we've made ourselves immune to this idea of struggle. And here's what I mean by that. Sometimes what we'll do, we'll come into our relationship with God. We'll come to the table with Jesus. We'll come into environments. We'll come into congregations. We'll come into relationships. You could put anything in that blank. We'll come into things with a utopian mindset. Now, what's a utopia? A utopia is almost like this bubble, okay? Anything outside of that bubble can be struggle, can be pain, can be hurt, can be argument, can be disease, whatever the case might be. Name any bad thing, that's outside of the bubble. But the utopia is where you want to be, in the bubble. Within that bubble, there's no struggle. There's never disagreement. There's never failure. There's never any of that. Because we've created in our minds, we've made ourselves delusional. So now we come into congregations thinking, oh, these are Christian people. It's going to be perfect here. We come into institutions. This is going to be perfect here. We come into relationship. This is a Christian guy. This is a Christian girl. This is going to be perfect here. Why? Because in our minds, we painted the picture, because they claim to follow Christ, this is going to be a utopian mindset. This is going to be perfect. This is going to be perfect. Here's what we missed. And even sitting at the table with Jesus, well, Jesus is perfect. There's no way he would test me. There's no way he would challenge me. There's no way he would take something away. You see what I'm saying? So now here's what we'll do. With that mindset, here's one thing we don't account. We don't account for the human element. Now, in theory, when you get a bunch of Christians together, should it be great? Absolutely. Should it be a place where there's no division? Absolutely. Should it be a place where there's forgiveness, where there's love? Should it? Yeah. When you come into a relationship with a Christian guy, a Christian girl, should it be, in theory, a great relationship? It should be. Should it be one where there's mutual love and there's mutual forgiveness? And should it be? Yes. But what's the element that we leave out? When you leave out the human element in every situation on this planet is inevitable. I sound like Thanos, right? I am inevitable, right? The human element outside of Jesus. Now, he was human, but in terms of our failure, we are inevitable. The human element is inevitable, meaning it's going to happen. Now, let me make this very clear. We have to have a balanced view. So we can't come into situations, relationships, whatever you want to put. We can't come into the situation with a utopian mindset. But also, on the other side of the pendulum, we can't come into situations with such a pessimistic well, the human element is here. So therefore, since the human element is here, the moment that I meet you, the moment that I come to this congregation, the moment that I come to this place, I'm waiting on somebody, a brother, a sister, a family, I'm waiting on them to fail me. They might not fail me now, but eventually they will. And guess what will happen? Eventually, guess what somebody's going to do, maybe intentionally or unintentionally? What's going to happen? Human error is going to happen, and somebody's going to do, say something you don't like or don't want. And therefore, guess what you could say? I knew it. I was waiting on this. I knew somebody was going to fail me, and there it is. And guess what you can say in your pride? I was right. that don't swing the pendulum and don't come into situations and do people and congregations and don't do your brethren bogus like that. Because now you're so prideful and thinking, well, see, I was right. People are going to fail. You see, you're coming into it with a pessimistic mindset. So we can't come to the table with a utopian mindset, and we can't come to the table with a pessimistic all the way over here left field mindset either. That's not fair. It's not fair to Jesus. It's not fair to your spouse. It's not fair to the person that you're it's not fair. It's not fair. So what are we going to learn? As we're sitting at the table with Jesus, Jesus is going to teach us. The love of that pursuit is amazing. The amazing conversation that I could have with Jesus and just understanding that a being, that a God pursues me and loves me, I love hearing that stuff. But eventually it's going to get to the point where the person that pursues you, real conversation is going to have to go down. Real conversation is going to have to happen. Now, does this have to be in a mean and mean-spirited and like a I'm throwing the hammer at you? Does it have to be that? No, it doesn't. But real conversation with Jesus, the God that pursues you, is going to have to happen. And sometimes we're not ready for that. And when we're not ready for that, then, well, Lord, I just don't have time to. Well, Lord, I just can't. I got a lot. You see what I mean? So now what are we doing? We're deflecting the struggle. We're deflecting. But we weren't saying that when we wanted to talk about how much Jesus loved me. But then when Jesus, hey, Jordan, what about your struggle, man? What's going on? Well, Lord, look at the time. I mean, this has been a great conversation. You see what I mean? You see what I mean? What Jesus is going to teach us today, Jesus is going to teach us, Jordan, put your name there. When you sit with me, do not sterilize and make yourself immune to struggling with me. Do not sterilize and make yourself immune to struggling with me. And don't make yourself so delusional to say, if you're struggling with Christ and therefore that's a red flag in your faith, or that's a red flag with this Christian guy, or that's a red flag with this congregation, or that's a red flag. You see how quick we'll do that? We've made ourselves immune to struggle. We made ourselves that way. So Jesus is going to try to get us out of that thinking. And we're going to see that from Exodus chapter 32. Okay, so let's go there. Let's dive into the text. I'm so pumped for this. We go to Exodus 32. Let's actually start. Let's start in like verse 8. Okay, Exodus chapter 32, and let's start in verse 8. So here's our if we're pointing this out, if you're taking notes, here's what's important. Here's one of the first things that we need to know. Understanding about the struggle. Understanding that fighting means that you actually feel something. Okay? Fighting means that you actually feel something. Now, quickly, before we dive into Exodus 32, ladies, real quick, I want you to imagine this. I want you to imagine that you're on a date with your spouse, you're on a date with whoever the case might be. I mean, you're just having a great time. I mean, things are great, things are amazing. I mean, the whole date has been incredible, right? So then now the last part of the date, you guys go out to dinner, right? And as you go out to dinner, your waitress is around the same age as you and your date, right? The waitress is around the same age. Attractive waitress, she's around the same age as both of you, right? So when she comes to you, ladies, she's nice, but she does like the normal thing, right? So, you know, can I get you something to drink? You know, you want an appetizer? You ready to order? Those type things. But when she comes to your date, when she comes to your guy, she starts to treat him a little bit differently. You know how sometimes you have questions on the menu? So the guy, hey, what is this good? Is this spicy? Is this not? Then she kind of leans in. She kind of starts kind of touching his arm. She said, I really like that shirt. I really like that vest you have on. So then just quick pause, guys. Sometimes things just go over our head so quick. Then the service here is just impeccable. It's extravagant. I've never had this happen. So ladies, if that goes down, what are you thinking? You see all this happening. What are you thinking? Why is he not saying something? Why is he not telling her to back up a little bit? Why is he not telling her that he's on a date with me? I know y'all are thinking that, right? So therefore, fighting for something means you feel something. So if we've made ourselves with Jesus and with others, if we've made ourselves immune to the idea of struggle, then guess what we say? If struggle for me, when I come into situations, if any sign of struggle is a red flag, then essentially then I don't feel anything. So I'm coming into situations completely dormant and empty. Yeah, make me feel something. Yep, Jesus, I'm here at the table. I appreciate it. Jesus, make me feel something. Christian guy that I met, make me feel something. Christian girl that I just met, make me feel. You see what I'm saying? So fighting means you actually, because in that situation with the girl, what do you want, ladies? You want the guy to feel something. Hey, look, can you back away? Because I'm here on a date with my beautiful date right now, and I just need my space, and I want to focus on her. So now guess what she could think in that moment? She could be thinking in that moment, man, if he's willing to fight for these little things, when things really go down, if they get to that point, guess what he'd be willing to do? He'd be willing to fight for me then too. So fighting actually means that you feel something. So now we find ourselves here in Exodus 32. Okay, here's our first point. Exodus 32. So this is right after the golden calf, right? Moses goes up to get the Ten Commandments. Joshua comes up. Look, the people there are being disorderly. Aaron builds the golden calf, gives all the people, give Aaron their gold. They build the golden calf. Now God is angry with his people, right? Now remember, God is in a covenant relationship with Israel. God is sitting at the table with Israel. God is pursued. God has always reminded Israel from Genesis 12 of the covenant that he had with them. God has always reminded them of that. But now God finds his bride once again committing harlotry. Now, notice what happens. Verse number 8, Exodus 32. Notice what your Bible says. They have turned, actually verse 7. The Lord said to Moses, go down, for your people whom you brought down from the land of Egypt, they've corrupted themselves. They've turned aside quickly out of the way which I have commanded them. I love the wording. Notice what God is saying. Go down, verse 7. Then he says, for your people. Isn't it interesting? Now remember, from the outside looking in, we understand that this is a test, I believe, for Moses. This is a test for him. But the way God is wording stuff is important. As we're sitting at that table with Jesus and God, notice what God is setting up. Look at what your people are doing, Moses. Look at what your people have done. And then verse 8, they have turned aside very, very quickly out of the way that I commanded them. Isn't that interesting? That's what we'll do too with Jesus. You know, when I started off with Jesus, things were well. When I started off with this place, things were well. When I started off with these people, things were well. But things just, the tide just turned so quickly. So now that it turned so quickly in our minds, because in our society today, we've sterilized and we've immune struggle in our mind. Guess what we say? Well, that's a red flag. Yeah, they claim to be a Christian. They claim to be a Christian church. They claim, yep, that's a red flag. That's a red flag. Nope. And then we say like weird phrases that the world says, right? I don't attract. I don't go. I don't chase. I attract. I don't chase. I attract. See what I mean? We start saying stuff that it sounds so like, I don't even know what the word is. It sounds good to feed our delusional mind. But then at the same time, it's like, is this real though? You know, sometimes we really got to sit and listen to the stuff we're saying, right? We got to sit and listen to the stuff we're saying. So then verse 8, they made themselves a molded calf. They worshiped it. They sacrificed to it. So does this sound like at this point, does it sound like that Israel is being faithful to God and Jesus at the table? Nope. Is this bad? Yep. Is this struggle? Yep. Does God get rid of Israel? Now, as we keep going, notice what happens. This is your God, O Israel, that you brought out of the land of Egypt. So then the Lord said to Moses, verse 9, I have seen this people, and indeed, this people is a stiff-necked people. Was this true? Absolutely. Are there times where in my relationship with Christ, as I'm sitting at the table with him, are there times where Jordan can be stiff-necked? Yeah. Are there times when I deal with people that I can be stiff-necked? Yeah. Are there times where if the Lord seems fit and necessary, that if I date and marry, that I could be stiff-necked? Yeah, absolutely. So if there's times that we as individuals can, why do we take the human element that somebody else that enters our life or some place that we go, they're immune, there's no way they could do it. Why do we do that? Guess what that is? That's pride. And that's something that, you know, each day I'm trying to let the Lord continue to rip that out of me. And sometimes, guess what? The human element comes out. And sometimes, okay, maybe I should have said things differently. Maybe I should have did this differently. Maybe I should have went a different route in trying to explain this, right? But sometimes the human element. So if I give myself grace for that, why in the world am I not giving my brothers and sisters, and in this context of what we're talking about in this series, why in the world would I not give my spouse that grace? Why would I not give them that grace? But we're coming into mindsets that we've sterilized and we made ourselves immune to the idea of struggle. I can do it, but if anyone else does it, oh, it's not really that. That's not good for me. It's not really that we don't know how to work through it. So then when Jesus wants to work through things with me, when Jesus wants to work through things with you, because that's our thinking, that's our delusional mind, all Jesus is trying to do is help and love you. That's all he's trying to do. But then we can make Jesus out to be the enemy. Yet Jesus is just not time. We make Jesus. So then if we make Jesus that way, then we'll make everything else around us that way. So we've made enemies out of people that are probably just trying to help us. That's important to see. And Matt here, the minister that I work with here, Matt preached a sermon on this yesterday. And I'm gonna continue this next week. But the children of Israel later on down the line, remember when they left Egypt? And remember when they said they wanted the onions, the leeks, the melons, we want to go back to Egypt. But what did God provide them? The God that loved them, the God that pursued them, what did God provide? God provided manna and quail. But the Israelites had become so delusional that they said, God has given us nothing. So they made God the enemy. So guess what happens, God? And Hebrews 3 talks about this. When we get to the point where we make God the enemy because he's not giving us what we want right now, that means that our hearts are hard. And this is another instance of a hard heart. And so sometimes, when we sit with Jesus and Jesus is pursuing us and he's loving us, but then those hard conversations, those uncomfortable conversations with Jesus begin to happen, sometimes our hearts are so hard that he's just, all Jesus is trying to do in his humility, in his gentleness, in his love, in his justice, he's just trying to help you. He's just trying to come closer and know you more. But because our walls are so built up because of this idea that we've accepted in society that struggle is a red flag with God and anybody, then when struggle happens, then the wall that we've built up gets built up higher. So then we don't let Jesus in until the conversation gets sweet again. You see what I mean? I think about when you think about our hearts. You remember, we looked at this in the Rahab series, right, in Joshua chapter 2. Remember when Rahab mentioned, because of what God has done for the Israelites, our hearts have melted, right? There's something about, have you ever seen a movie or maybe even in real life for you? You see somebody you see a couple and you see when she comes to him or whatever the case might be, or even a child comes to a parent, that the child kind of just melts within that parent's arms. There's a interesting concept of Jesus. All he wants to do is just hold us. But sometimes for some of us, when Jesus holds us, that makes our heart just, man, maybe I do need to do better. We melt. But then sometimes when God in his pursuit, when he holds us, sometimes we get, Lord, why are you, get off me. Get, Lord, I didn't ask you to do this. I didn't ask you to care. I didn't ask you to love me. I didn't ask you to care. I didn't ask you to even come into my life. Get off of me. So if we do that with Jesus, then we'll do that with people that love God too. I never asked you to be here. I never asked you to care. I never asked you to. So then guess what? We'll make that person that cares, we'll make them the enemy. And we never see ourselves as the one with the hard heart. It's on me. my defenses have been up. So I've made God and other people that's loved me in my life, I've made them the enemy. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. You see why I said before, this is stuff that, again, this is another concept where you may just have to sit back and you may have to be real with yourself, and you may have to pause. And if you have to come back to this podcast in a couple of days, in a couple of hours, do what you got to do. All right, do what you got to do. But this is stuff we can't hide ourselves from this idea. We have for too long. And where has it gotten us? It's gotten us depressed. It's gotten us with high levels of anxiety. It's gotten us to a point where we want the church and other people around us to be literally almost like Jesus for us. It's gotten to a point where other people, the advice that they give us advice that everybody around you has. Everybody around us, family, friends, our married friends, they're the ones that, because they know you, they just, oh yeah, you're always right. So we're walking around delusional. And then we wonder why we go to bed. We wonder why we walk around in this life completely confused and hurt and have this void in our lives, because we're not facing what we need to see with God. And then when other people that care about us, we're not letting them in. See what I'm saying? This is dangerous. And I don't want you guys to be in that position. So again, from our concept of what we're talking about, fighting means you feel something. So if we are going to define what's going down right now in Exodus 32, God is having a struggle with Israel. And Moses is on the outside of the table almost looking in. Now, Moses is a part of it because he's a part of Israel. But in this sense, he's kind of almost on the outside looking in. So now you have this relationship where it's God and Israel fighting. And as they're fighting, I want you to notice something. Notice verse, where is it at? Verse 9. Okay. So the Lord said to Moses, I've seen this stiff-necked people, and indeed, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, leave me alone. Now, again, understanding God, understanding his nature, understanding who he is, God is not throwing away Israel. I believe in the grand scheme of things, based off the text, and I believe the text proves it, that this is a test for Moses. This is a test for Moses. Now, does it mean that these things that he was saying about Israel wasn't true? It is true, but this is a test. God in his infinite wisdom. But I love the irony of this. Now, therefore, because I'm struggling with Jesus at this table, because Jesus wants to know me intimately, and I didn't ask him for that, because Jesus wants to be there. I didn't ask you to be here. Because Jesus wants to be here, why are you even, just leave. Just leave. Guess what God says? Leave me alone. Now, if we're being honest, all of us at some point have done this. We got to be real. All of us at some point have done this. Someone has cared. And it's gotten to the point where when Jesus cared or when someone has cared, we've gotten to the point where things were just so messed up that we're just like, you know what? Just don't talk. I literally talked to somebody yesterday after services, and a really, really good friend of mine. And he's like, man, do you remember that time where I wanted nothing to do with you, bro? I was like, I do. He said, remember that time, man, where I just didn't know what I wanted? Yep. Yeah, I remember, bro. You remember that time where we were just like, I just wanted nothing to do with anybody? Yep. But you picked up the phone. Yep, I did. You see what I mean? So now what we can easily do is we need to see ourselves in a position where there were times where all of us, my friend that I just said, me, you, if you're being real, there's times when all of us, I don't want anything to do with anybody. But I'm just trying to help. Did I ask for your help? Did I ask for your conversation? Did I ask for you to care? No, I didn't. So if I would have asked for you to be here, I would have asked. So just lay off. Lay off. Haven't we done that? That's real. All of us have done it. And I love the irony of this, because God is like, just leave me alone, Moses. Now, what's our first point? Fighting means you feel something. Leave me alone, Moses. This is what God wanted Moses to see. God knew that he was always going to fight for Israel, but I think he wanted to test to see if Moses was going to fight for him. Well, that sounds kind of cruel. Why would he test that? Ladies, in that situation, you might not have set that situation up, but guess what that is, essentially? When that attractive waitress comes and you're sitting there having a date and the girl's all on this guy, guess what that is? You want to see if he's going to respond. That's a test. So when we say it to God, well, God, that's cruel. Why would you do that? We do that. So why would we say that that's cruel that God does it, but then we have the license to do it? That's a test. So I think this is all this is. It's a test. Now, therefore, leave me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make. Now, this is crazy. Forget Israel. Let's just throw Israel to the side. I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm just, forget them. Let's just focus on you. You're the one, Moses. You're the one that's been doing what I've said. So I'm going to make, let's just wipe them out, and I'm going to make a great nation of you. Now the lens switches to Moses. Okay, so you're throwing away Israel. I mean, God, I do understand they are stiff-necked. I will agree, right? We can agree on that. They are stiff-necked. But you're going to uplift me? You're going to give me a great nation? You're going to make me this person? You see, when we don't know how to struggle with God, and when situations like this are presented, these are situations that are called the grass is greener on the other side situations. So now I want you to think about this with Jesus and in your life. If you've been caught in this delusion that struggle is a red flag with God and with other people, you're going to fall into the category of the grass is greener on the other side situation. So then therefore what you'll do in every situation, you'll hop and you'll hop and you'll hop and you'll hop from person to person, to person to person, to person to person to person. So then after you get done hopping, what do you not see? You see the person that's, well, they're treating me well. You see that, which that can be great. But here's what you're not seeing, like we saw before. You're not seeing the human element. So if we don't know how to deal with the human element, you're going to be hopping for life. And I care about you guys enough that I don't want to see y'all just hopping for life. Don't fall into the grass. One of the phrases I love, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. The grass is greener where you water it. And sometimes because of this delusion we've accepted, we're so ready just to hop to the next place. Hop to the next place to go. Hop to the next person. Hop to the next time. We're so ready to do that, but we don't know. We've lost the art of how to water the grass. We've lost the art of how to water the grass. And guess what? In order for me with a congregation, in order for me with who I'm dating, in order for me with my wife, in order for me with Jesus, in order for me with whatever you want to put in that blank, guess what watering the grass means? It means I have to W-O-R-K. It means I got to put in work. It means I have to be intentional. It means I have to think of grass outside of my own. It means I have to pick up weeds. It means I have to mow the grass. It means I have to take care of the lawn. It means I have to watch it. It means I have to see if it's getting too tall. It means I have to do those things. And guess what? In our society, because we don't know how to struggle, we don't know how to W-O-R-K anymore. That's bad. It's a bad word. It's a red flag. It's a red flag. What's our phrase? What's our phrase again? I don't chase, I attract. I don't chase. I don't chase, I attract. What do we talk about in part one? Who chases you? God. So why in the world is it simping? Why in the world is it wrong? Why in the world is it bad in the Christian context? Why is it wrong for me to chase somebody that I love? Somebody tell me that. Why is it wrong for me to do it if God can do it? Well, the women today don't really like that. Okay, the women for not for me don't like that, but the right one will. The right one for you will. You know, that's the thing, guys. You got to stop. And with this mindset, with this delusional mindset, you're going to find yourself playing games. Well, let's see who texts first. Well, let's see who does this first. And then you talk to your single friends and you talk to your early married. What are they doing right now? Well, we'll see if they come to you first. See if they do this first. See if they break down and apologize first. I'm not with the games. I'm not with these high school games. If I'm wrong, hey, I'm sorry. If you're wrong, hey, I'm sorry. Let's do what God does. But the world teaches you to play games. Let's just do what God does. Let's just do what God does. Fighting means that you actually feel something. So what is God trying to get Moses to do? Moses, I'm trying to get you to feel. Not saying he didn't feel before, but there's always ways that God can improve our heart to help people. Let's keep improving that heart, Moses. Verse 10, leave me alone. I'll make a great nation out of you. Verse 11, then Moses, what does your Bible say? Then he pleaded. I love that, man. I love that. Moses pleaded. It's interesting. When God said in verse 10, this is an interesting point. I wanted to read this to you. In verse 10, when God said, leave me alone so I can do this, essentially, this is what he means. It's almost as if Moses did nothing and if Moses didn't respond, it's like God would just do it. So God wanted to see if Moses was going to fight. When Jesus is at the table with us, Jesus wants to see, are you going to fight for this relationship with me or are you not? Now, let's make something else clear. Does fighting for the relationship means that you just constantly, like there's no give and take? That's not fair. So that's like the Disney fighting. Well, he's not fighting for me. Well, she's not fighting for me. Like we got to define what that is. What does fighting mean? So does fighting mean you just drop everything? And that's not fair. And that's not the love of God. That's nowhere near Ephesians 5. That's nowhere near Philippians 2. So why are we telling people and why are we telling young Christian guys and girls to do this? Why are we telling older couples it's not it? That's not it. So what is fight? What is fighting? This is it, verse 11. Fighting is pleading. I'm praying on your behalf. Lord, right now it's hard to do this. This is a tough conversation, God. Lord, can you pray for me? Isn't it beautiful that Jesus prays for us? Remember what Jesus told Peter? Satan desires to have you, Peter. He desires to sift you like wheat. But Peter, the God that loves you, the God that pursues you, the God that just wants to sit at the table with you and love you, I'm praying for you. When's the last time we ask God, can you pray for me? Lord, during this time, I need your help. I'll pray to you, but Lord, can you pray for me? So how do I plead with God? I ask him to help me. How do I plead with my spouse? How do I plead with someone you're dating? I ask you to help me because guess what? I understand the human element is there. I understand sometimes the stiff-necked heart is there. And what we do sometimes, guys, we take advantage of that and we hold that over each other. Why do we hold? I think, and I was talking to somebody on the phone the other day about this. I believe Joseph's, and I'm not taking away anything else that happened. I mean, all those things that happened to Joseph was extremely tragic. Please don't think I'm demeaning anything about what Joseph went through. But I believe Joseph's biggest test was when those who were so stiff-necked to him, even though there were things he had to improve on too, they needed him now. They needed him now. Sometimes what we do is when people fail us, when people hurt us, essentially within the relationship, and I'm talking about God, but I'm talking about relationships with others in a broad sense. Sometimes when we're hurt and you're the innocent party, then that kind of puts you on a pedestal because you're the one that's wrong. You're the one that's knocked down and I'm the one that's right. So therefore, in that instance, sometimes what can happen is pride can set in, and the what people say, they did that to you, they said this to you, they did this to you. Oh, they need to, they, you need to wait for them to come to you and beg. You need to, you see the pride that other people can instill in, and these are Christian people telling us to do this stuff. Christian advice, people telling us to do. No wonder we're so delusional. No wonder. We've all listened to it. But in that state, you feel like you have this thing. There's this gap. And in order for you to come up, you got to come up. Now, obviously, is there a role for that person to play? Absolutely. But if I'm not mistaken, in Luke 15, when this person did like this, God did this. So there's a role for both people to play. Why don't we talk about that? Because I think, in my personal opinion, I think we like the feeling. There's a certain level of satisfaction and almost self-gratification that comes from somebody humbly coming to you. And if you look at it the wrong way, and especially if something that they did really hurt you, there's this level of finally you said something. And then we'll drag it out. You know how long I've thought about this. You know how long I've dwelt on this. You know how, so we'll drag it out, because then we want them to really just be like a pauper in front of us. That's not God. But why do we do that? That's not fighting the right way. And there's nothing wrong with struggle. There's nothing wrong with this fight and this wrestle. But again, here's a little piece in point too. If you're going to fight, learn to fight fair. There's nothing wrong with healthy struggle. Struggle with God. I mean, think about Jacob, Genesis 32. Think about struggling, wrestling, fighting with God. It's healthy, but it's got to be fair. Struggling, wrestling with people, with friends, with the person you're dating, with your wife. It's a part of it because it's healthy, but it's got to be fair mutually. Not just fair on the husband's side. It's got to be fair on hers too. It's got to be fair. If you're going to fight, fight fair. Fight fair. Then Moses pleaded. He's fighting now. And he said to the Lord, "Why does your wrath burn hot against your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt with great power? Why should the Egyptians," verse 12, "why should they speak that you brought them out to harm just to kill them from the mountains? Turn your fierce wrath and relent this harm from your people." Remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God." You know, as we learn to struggle with God, it's all about making peace with Him. And as we do this, we're not just wrestling just for the sake of doing it. Like, we're not doing it because people say, "Well, then, you know, that just happens when you guys get together." Like, that's not the reason. The reason why you do it's got fighting has to have a purpose. What are we trying to understand here? What are we trying to get here? I'm trying to understand you, and you're trying to understand me. So what's the goal? Peace. Oh, I didn't see that you saw things that way. Okay, I see that now. Yeah, I mean, at the time I didn't agree, but now I can understand how you got that impression. That makes sense. That makes sense. But yeah, in the moment, I just didn't see it. Now, guess what it is? All right, cool. You see what I see. Now I see what you see. See what I'm saying? See what I'm saying? So now it's beautiful. So now verse 13. Remember Abraham, Isaac, Israel, your servants to whom you swore. Now remember, what did God say before to Moses? This is your people that's doing this. But then watch how Moses turns it back. Now Moses is fighting fair, and Moses is fighting with feeling now. So now Moses says, "I will multiply not my descendants, God, not Moses's, they're yours. I'll multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. And all this land I have spoken, I will give to your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever." So then verse 14. So the Lord relented from the harm that he said that he would do to his people. Again, this is a test. Moses fought for them. Guys, these things, these phrases, these ideologies. All it does, it sounds amazing and it sounds good to tell the person that hurt you, but all it does, it puts you on an island. I don't chase, I attract. Oh, I don't do this, I let people come to me. I don't chase nobody. I don't look for anybody. I don't pray or plead for anybody. That's devilish talk. That is devilish talk. And a lot of us, and at times even myself, a lot of us have been caught in that mindset, and then we tell that mantra to everybody else around us. And we let other people and other single people and other married people, and we tell us and we hear what they say, but none of us are looking at God at the table. None of us are. So all of us, I don't want to say none. Let me rephrase that. Not many at times, myself included, we're not at the table. And we need to just stop listening to what everybody else has to say. How would Jesus handle this situation? Would Jesus apologize? Would Jesus chase? Would Jesus fight fair? Would Jesus fight with feeling for my spouse? Would he do that? The world's telling me not to, because that's not what a man does. The world's telling me not to. Women in this world are telling me if you do that, then that I view you as a weak man. So be it. But if that's the case, I want to be like Christ. So if that means that this group of women or this pool of women think that that's weak, those aren't the women for me. It's just not. I want to read something to you. This is important for you young guys out there, for you young ladies out there, for those that are single out there, even for you marrieds out there. This is a pretty awesome quote. And and keep this in mind from the context of marriage that we talked about with Jesus, right? Our struggle that we are sitting with him, struggling with him, and having him melt our heart. But I want you to think about this concept in the realm of marriage now, okay? How would you ever learn unconditional love if you were married to someone who met all of your conditions? Again, what has been our delusional mindset? Struggle is a red flag. Therefore, in our minds, we're implying that you have to meet all my conditions. How, he goes on to say, how would you ever learn mercy, patience, long-suffering, heartfelt compassion if you were married to someone who never failed you, who was never difficult with you, who never sinned against you, who was never slow to acknowledge or to ask for forgiveness? How would you ever learn to pour out your favor on someone who did not deserve it if you were married to someone who was always deserving of all good things? The main purpose of marriage is that through your marriage, you become conformed to the image of Jesus. Marriage, I believe, is the greatest instrument of sanctification. It helps us to become more like God. The husband becoming more like Christ, the wife becoming more like him, together. Isn't that beautiful? But that can't happen if I'm walking around as a young man, if you're walking around as a young woman, if I'm walking around delusional. And it also can't happen if I'm walking around giving Christian young men delusional advice. It's not going to happen. So let's stop with all those games, and let's just sit at the table with our Lord. Y'all see why I was sweating yesterday just wanting to talk about this? This is too much. I've got so much work to look at. I've got so much work to do. I mean, just having the heart of Christ, and there's so much more to have him melt my heart, and just having this process of doing this with him, man. It's just, if we really do this, the internal work is difficult. I mean, this stuff is hard, especially if you're listening to this and you're seeing, man, I really haven't been doing this. the internal work is difficult. It's hard, and it's hard to see yourself as wrong. But it's the result of sitting at the table. It's the result of sitting at the table. So this is part three, man. I cannot wait, man. I cannot wait for next week. I love you guys so much. Appreciate you guys. Again, reach out, leave a DM, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Spotify, follow the podcast, like on YouTube. We want to be here for you guys. Reach out to us. You will not be the first. We're all on a journey together to just go back to the heart of God, right? We're on the journey together to do that. And love you guys, man. Appreciate you guys. And Lord willing, we will see you guys next week. Thanks, guys.